Today's service asks a question, an elephant in the room, by Reverend Matt Aspen. Prairie strives to be a place where difficult conversations can be had by people that sometimes disagree mightily, a rare space in this world where decisions about what is in the collective best interest of the community can be made without fear of retribution. So in this space of Prairie, where we strive to have all discussions, are there topics we're not quite ready to tackle? Today's service relates to our sixth principle, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Reverend Matt?
Good morning, everyone. It is good to be with you here today, as it always is, and I am so grateful for each of you. It has been almost 54 years since the civil rights activist who we will be honoring with a national holiday tomorrow was assassinated. The first efforts to set aside a day to remember his legacy were proposed 11 years after his death in 1979. The legislation made it through Congress and was signed into law by Ronald Reagan in 1983, and the new holiday was officially celebrated for the first time in this country in 1986. Can you imagine anything getting through Congress that quickly these days? Still, it took a good while longer, but it was finally officially recognized as a holiday in all 50 states in January of 2000. In the 20 plus years since that time, this country elected and then re-elected a Black president. Now, if you were just reading these facts on Wikipedia, you might think that we were living in a country which had long since moved past the painful history against which King and the other leaders of the fight for civil rights in this country sought to overcome. Sadly, if you are paying any attention at all to the news these days, you quickly recognize that this country is still a long way away from actually living into the dream that Dr. Martin Luther King shared with us. That dream where his four young children lived in a nation where they would be judged not by the color of their skin, but the content of their character. We have made progress, but there is a mighty long way to go. At the time of King's death, the recently merged Unitarian and Universalist faith traditions were actually well positioned to become a potent force in the struggle to overcome our nation's tarnished history of race relations. We had joined the marches in Selma, and Unitarian Universalist minister James Reeb, who, as you may know, our sister congregation on the west side of Madison was named after, had become a martyr after being beaten to death by three white segregationalists in 1965. It is worth noting that little media attention was given to the murder of Jimmie Lee Jackson, the Black deacon in the Baptist church and a civil rights activist killed by white law enforcement officers in that same space, the event that had been the catalyst for these marches in the first place. But it was Reeb's death that ultimately led to the national outcry against the activities of white racists in the Deep South. And it was Reeb's name that President Lyndon B. Johnson invoked when he delivered a draft of the Voting Rights Act to Congress. Wait a minute. Aren't we still talking about voting rights legislation in Congress today? The more things change, the more they stay the same. History does have a way of repeating itself, especially when we fail to heed her lessons. And that arc of the moral universe thing sure does seem to stubbornly resist the many attempts continually being made towards its bending. So, as I mentioned just a minute ago, during this pivotal moment in history, the recently merged Unitarian and Universalist faiths were actually positioned to become a version of the multiracial, multicultural faith community that had been envisioned decades earlier by Dr. King's mentor, Howard Thurman, in his Church of the Fellowship of All Peoples. Alas, it was not meant to be. As reported in UU World Magazine, the progression from the civil rights agenda to calls for Black empowerment was swift. Even as Martin Luther King led the Civil Rights March in Washington, Malcolm X was preaching not integration, but separatism. In 1967, racial rioting left 23 dead in Newark and 43 in Detroit. In the months before his assassination, King was being pushed by younger supporters to abandon nonviolence and alliances with whites. In response to this unrest, the UU minister Homer Jack, director of the UUA Department of Social Responsibility, called an emergency conference on Unitarian Universalists' response to the Black Rebellion. If you are not yet familiar with what happened next, I encourage you to Google the UU Black Empowerment Controversy and research this history for yourself. The tale begins with $1 million being pledged to the newly formed UU Black Affairs Council to help fight political repression and economic exploitation in the Black community and support Black cultural expressions and community education. From that point forward, let's just say that everything quickly began to unravel. Jeanette Hopkins, one of the chairs at the 1967 conference, later noted in her memoir, "We, who should have been a model in the fight against racial injustice, instead spent our energies fighting amongst ourselves." Let me say that again. "We, who should have been a model in the fight against racial injustice, instead spent our energies fighting amongst ourselves." Whether you witness this history firsthand or are just hearing about it for the first time today, know that the wounds that were created during these events created scars that still run deeply through this association. Fast forward to today. There is a new controversy swirling through our denomination, a controversy that you may not have been aware of until a former beloved member of this congregation decided to share with the many gathered here the source of this current division. The controversy I am referring to began with the distribution of a book written by former UU minister Todd Eckloff in response to our association's attempt to find new and better ways forward in our efforts to build a more just and equitable world. Ever since that former member graciously let me and your board know that she planned to share these materials, I've known that I would have to come up here and speak to you about it. And truth be told, this is the first speech I've ever been afraid to deliver. But recognize, I'm not afraid for myself. Although you have the ability to fire me at any time if you disagree with what I say, and that could ultimately lead to the end of my ministerial career, I'm not worried about that at all. Even if my ministry goes down in flames, I know that I can easily turn around, go back to corporate America, land a six-figure job, and just give up the dream that fueled my ministry. No, what I am really more fearful of is the fact that if not properly managed, the movement behind the controversial materials that have been shared by this former member are developing a disastrous track record of tearing UU communities apart. I've seen this with my own eyes. I've seen my friends impacted by it, and it is truly heartbreaking. My primary commitment in this moment is to ensure that this doesn't happen to this community. Now, truth be told, I believe the foundation here is likely strong enough to overcome any challenge that this effort, known as the Gadfly Movement, may present, but it's not inevitable. I'm not going to go into the details of the debate at the heart of this controversy today. If you come across these materials and begin to read them, I encourage you to do so. But I simply request that you also seek out the myriad of writers that have sought to counter some of the false narratives that underpin some of the thrust of this movement. There will be plenty of opportunity in the coming weeks and months to discuss the structures at play on both sides of this debate. If you want to know more or discern my positions on this debate, ask me in the discussion or follow up with me. I will always welcome conversation, even with those that believe they may disagree with me. In fact, it is those that disagree with me that I most want to be in conversation with. What I really want to focus on today is the lesson our history seeks to teach us, to help us position ourselves not just for this potential dispute, if it ends up taking hold here, but rather to better prepare us to meet this pivotal moment in history we find ourselves in, better prepared than those that came before us. We, who should have been a model in the fight against racial injustice, instead spent our energy fighting amongst ourselves. Eckhoff's main point is that the approach the UUA is currently espousing towards addressing the ongoing challenges of race relations in this country is wrong and is counter to the foundational ideals of the Unitarian Universalist faith tradition. What you will find if you decide to read his materials and then the rebuttals may feel very familiar. Eckhoff and others that have joined his crusades make a series of claims about the way things are and the way they should be based on their perspective. And various other voices have come along and attempted to discount his arguments point by point. One side makes a compelling sounding argument. The other side fires back with compelling sounding counters. The longer the debate rages on, mostly online, mostly on social media, the more heated the disagreements get, until both sides have so denigrated the other that the possibility of a healthful, productive dialogue is nearly impossible. We, who should have been a model in the fight against racial injustice, instead spent our energies fighting amongst ourselves. My problem with Eckhoff is similar as it is with the member that chose to relinquish her membership at Prairie. Not completely the same, but there are strands. Eckhoff will falsely tell you that he lost his standing with the UUA because he proposed ideas that were counter to the majority opinion. Of all the things that he shares, some of which I absolutely validate, but of all the things that he shares, this one fact, this inflammatory fact, could not be further from the truth. The reason he lost his standing as a minister in the UUMA is that we are a faith tradition not based on creed, but instead on the promises we make to each other regarding the principles we seek to uphold, promises that are made in the form of covenants. As a minister, I am beholden to an agreed upon and continually updated covenant and code of conduct that I have agreed to abide by, which includes accountability procedures if I fail to live up to these agreed upon intentions. Eckhoff's issue is not that he dissented. Dissent is both celebrated and expected in this faith tradition. It's foundational to who we are. He was censured because he declined repeated requests from our voluntary association to engage in dialogue with those that expressed that some of the points that he was making were both false and harmful, especially to those that hold marginalized identities. So again, I say that my issue with Eckhoff is nearly the same as it is with this member that renounced her membership and then shared these materials with the members of this community. I believe it's the foundation of nearly all the problems we see in this country today, exacerbated by social media. Freedom of speech is a foundational principle in this country and in this faith, and a person is free to express whatever opinions they choose. When those thoughts are shared widely, without rigorous fact-checking, and without the expectation that they will need to defend the claims that are made, you risk falling down a very slippery slope. Faith in all of our institutions is at an all-time low, from religions to government to the organizations that report our news. The evidence of this was on stark display just over a year ago, as a mob of angry insurgents came very close to overrunning the Capitol and potentially toppling our democracy, spurned on by individuals and a political apparatus that has very clearly denounced the validity of facts and rigorous debate as the foundation upon which healthy society should function. I hold no ill will to either Todd Eckhoff or the member that has chosen to step away, although I do hold Eckhoff to a higher standard because he had accepted the additional responsibility that comes from taking on the title of Unitarian Universalist minister. I surely hold our former Prairie member no ill will, because I sensed that she came to believe that the community was headed in a direction that she disagreed with, and she felt that it wasn't safe for her to disagree. I've tried repeatedly to invite her back into membership, and will continue to do so for as long as I'm here. I don't know that my invitations will ever be accepted, but that will not stop me from continuing to do what I've been called to do, to use my efforts to strengthen the bonds within this community and to challenge us to be a place where all can come to debate the issues of the day safely and without fear of retribution. You see, the thing that initially attracted me to this faith and to this community specifically, and the thing that will keep me coming back again and again, no matter how vigorously we might disagree, is the stated intentions you have all made to each other. What this society says it strives to be, and in most cases is pretty damn good at doing, is exactly what is most needed in this world, in this moment in history. A safe place where folks with different backgrounds, beliefs, and ways of being can come together in mutual support. As radical as the democratic experiment of the United States is, this faith tradition is grounded on just as radical a proposition. The premise that a group of disparate individuals, each granted the freedom to find our own way in the world, can somehow remain together despite the very different conclusions we may come to about the best way forward. Strength of the democratic ideal in this country and this faith are founded upon is that separate individuals, granted the freedom to pursue their own unique destinies, are ultimately better off if they defer some level of their own comfort to the betterment of the whole. You may recall a story I shared early on my time with you of a woman that asked me to explain Unitarian Universalism. One of the things I noted was that we replace the responsibility for determining what is true and right within each individual. Her response to me was, "That is terrifying." And ultimately, she was right. Because we humans are imperfect creatures. And left to our own devices, we don't always make the best choices for ourselves, never mind for the good of the collective. The strength of this faith tradition, the same as our democracy, is found within the relational bonds that are formed between individuals. None of us, on our own, honestly has enough power to achieve anything of worth. Any potential we have to make an ounce of difference in this world depends on our ability to put our differences aside and to work together for the common good. There is a heavy humanist streak running through this community, and I believe this is one of your strengths as well. My words today draw a great deal of inspiration from the Third Humanist Manifesto, which states in part that humanists long for and strive toward a world of mutual care and concern, free of cruelty and its consequences, where differences are resolved cooperatively without resorting to violence. The joining of individuality with interdependence enriches our lives, encourages us to enrich the lives of others, and inspires hope of attaining peace, justice, and opportunity for all. Goes on to say that humanists are concerned for the well-being of all, are committed to diversity, and respect those of differing yet humane views. The test of these ideals and the ideals of any democratic society will always be found not in the places where we agree, but during the times when we perceive potential differences. Eckhoff, and I think this former member as well, mistakenly believed that the UUA, or me in my role as a minister, is intent on imposing a set of ideals onto you, along with the mistaken belief that either entity has the power to do so. Ours is a tradition that grew up during a time that valued rugged individualism, and those roots run deep. There is a natural and healthy distrust of institutions and a continual challenging of their directions. But it is a mistake to think that myself or the UUA has a lick of power over the decisions made by this community. I challenge you to search the 50 pages of bylaws that govern our voluntary association and find a single power the UUA has to impact the functioning of this community. I can save you the time and promise you that it doesn't exist. This community could literally come out publicly and it says it supports the efforts of the Proud Boys and the insurrectionists that stormed the Capitol, and there is not a single thing the UUA could do about it. And if I try to lead you in any direction that you do not collectively choose to go, you can quite easily send me on my way, and there is nothing I can do about that. When we say congregational polity, this is what we mean. Each UU congregation is in charge of its own fate and direction. We are not a denomination beholden to dictates from above, but rather a voluntary association of member congregations, individual communities that covenant and affirm to promote a series of principles informed by the wisdom of many diverse sources. Our shared covenant as free members of this association is nothing more than a promise to one another of our mutual trust and support. One of our stated principles is the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Another of our principles holds that the path to this outcome is the use of the democratic process, both within our congregations and in society at large. If we truly believe these words, and we truly believe the democratic ideals upon which this country was founded are the best way forward for the betterment of all, then it is incumbent upon each of us to do all that we can to strengthen the structures upon which these foundations are built. Leaving the community when we sense we might disagree with its direction is not the path forward. This is a strategy that is being employed by those that are currently seeking to destroy our democracy through force. We once again find ourselves at a pivotal moment in history. I was in a meeting the other day discussing potential topics for future Sundays, and our resident historian and today's presider, Robin, held up a layperson from our history whose writings have been found, revealing fascinating interactions with many of the names we hold up as icons of our faith tradition. I reminded the group that this person was no different than any individual gathered here today. An individual inspired by our ever-evolving ideals, committed to the work of social justice, that just happened to live at a pivotal time in history that had an outsized impact on the formation of our current beliefs and the future of humanity. We are living in such a time. The UUs that participated in the failed integration efforts that have come to be known as the Black Empowerment Controversy were the same as the folks gathered here today. As I look back on that history, I can't imagine how different the world might have been if that collective of individuals at that moment in history had been successful in their efforts to find a way forward together. Can you imagine how different our world would be if that community, riding the wave of potential that was available in that moment of history when the Civil Rights Act was first adopted, had found a way to unite two peoples whose history to that point had been so violent and unequal to work collectively for the common good? As I reviewed this history, it is painfully clear where things went wrong. Groups with differing experiences tried to come together without grounding their work deeply in the only tool that we have available that has any chance of working in that situation, a shared covenant. As I imagine what might have been, I recommit myself to helping this community, to which I have pledged my allegiance, to strengthen its sacred practice of covenanting for the betterment of the collective. Because none of us knows when or where the next pivotal test of our democracy or our faith will come. All we can do is commit to learn from mistakes made by those that came before as we strive to sustain the lofty ideals we each profess to embrace by our voluntary association within this faith. The path forward as shared in that little story this morning, is as it always has been. Through the courage of sharing ourselves with each other and through the development of respectful human relationships. Not in spite of our differences, but strengthened by them. Blessed be, and may it be so.
Thank you, Reverend Matt. And I'm sure we'll have some comments.
When I first started, I said, there's going to be some things that you're going to think I'm a broken record on. And one of them is covenant, because to me, that is foundational. I've heard say that there is that UU communities have both a mission and a shadow mission. And the mission is those lofty ideals that we put up that make us feel good and excite us and energize us to take on some things. But the shadow mission is often much more pedestrian. It's we want a place where people who think like us can get together and hang out and support each other and witness each other's journeys. And it doesn't always go up to that loftier ideal. But if we are going to truly live into the aspirational portions of our faith tradition, it requires us to have mechanisms in place that can allow us to disagree even strongly while maintaining the relationship and relationships and the ties that bind us. Religion, the foundation of the word religion means to bind. It means to bind together, to intentionally bind together in community in support of each other. And for me, that's kind of pivotal to it all, is to make sure that no matter what we face, we have strong enough mechanisms in place to help us maintain our relationships so that no one is left behind at the end of a disagreement. The only thing that I'll say is that my response to those, I have read the materials. I've kept up with this rift for the last 3 or 4 years. And my only response is that instead of reading the back and forth banter that went between the folks that are espousing the ideals that were forwarded by Reverend Eckhoff and others, is that I've been in conversation with many people, colleagues, lay folks in the association that hold marginalized identities. And they have told me that the information that is presented in these materials is harmful to them. And I learned long ago in my training as a human resources professional, believe the victim. If somebody is telling you that they are being harmed in some way, the first step is to believe that what they are telling you is true. Now, as an HR professional, I was also trained to trust but verify. And I have learned over time that diligence of research in when things are brought forward is also a good thing. But in my experience in this instance, what I've been told by the folks who hold marginalized identities is that this information is harmful. And they have asked me to try to limit its impact in our denomination. And again, in keeping with our tradition of open and honest dialogue, I'm a little conflicted about those two polarities. I read a thing, I'm not sure if I can find it. I read a thing that basically talked about the difference between freedom of speech. I wish I could remember what it was. It's just the idea that all speech should be encouraged, but there is also work to be done to counter speech that is either hurtful or untrue. And so that's the thing that I'm kind of wrestling with.